Hello. Hi. You look great today. Welcome to the January Lilith for Your Cats project with me, January Lilith. This is episode one of the January Lilith for Your Cats project, the second episode, but the first real episode. And if you listened to the 0th episode, which is the first fake episode, welcome back. And if you didn't, welcome. Well, that's great. So, as you know or don't know, the January Lilith Warrior Cats Project is a podcast where I read through every single book in the Warrior Cats series written by Aaron Hunter. I actually have my list, so I can tell you that this is 78 books in the series that I am reading, and then at the same time, I am also going to read or watch or play or do another thing, and then talk about that and just kind of, mash them up together and see what happens. So today, in this first episode, we are talking about Warriors number one, Into the Wild, and we are also talking about the video game Elden Ring, developed by From Software. Anything else I want to say to start us off? Apologies if the audio was a little fucked last time. I think I was recording a little bit too loud. I think my mic was a little too hot. I think it was a little peaking. I think I fixed that. That doesn't seem to be a problem, but if it is, I will happily self-flagellate. Aside from that, today I'm drinking water out of my water bottle, and I am also finishing up just the last little bit of a Pure Leaf raspberry tea. It's a nice little nice iced tea. It's got a nice sweet flavor, but not overly sugary sweet. It's nice. I was thinking about maybe bringing an orange bubbly to the table for today, but I was walking home and I was super thirsty and I was picking up flour at Sobeys. I saw the Pure Leafs and I was like, oh, I love a Pure Leaf. So I picked up one of those to drink on the walk home and while recording this year podcast. So let's get into it. Let's talk about Warriors number one, Into the Wild, the first book in the first Warriors series called Warriors or The Prophecies Begin. So the book starts off. I'll give like a quick, pretty. I'll try to be pretty quick. I'll give a pretty quick summary of just like the book, what happens in it, who the principal players are. So like, you. I want you to have a rough idea of what's going on if you have never read this book or never read a Warriors book before. So the book starts off with a prologue. There's sort of two quick vignettes. The first takes place from the perspective of ThunderClan warriors. We get the cats Redtail and Tigerclaw in a kind of battle for territory against their rivals in RiverClan, and they're kind of involved in like a tough, scrappy, bloody battle. And then we get a quick cut to Blue Star, the leader of ThunderClan, and Spotted Leaf, the ThunderClan medicine cat, and they're talking about shit's bleak. It's hard to be a forest cat, but the Spotted Leaf gets a prophecy from StarClan, who's the god cats, the space ghost god cats, and they tell her that fire alone will save the clan. Cut to fire. Spoilers, I guess. So the main character of this book, and in fact the main character of all six of the first series of Warrior books, is a cat who first goes by the name Rusty, and he's a house cat. He's a what the warrior cats call a kitty pet. He lives like a kind of quiet, sheltered life. He's nervous about going off to the vet and getting fixed because then he will become lazy and slow. And he really wants to catch a mouse because he has dreams of like going into the forest and catching a mouse. And then one day he strays a little bit too far and he encounters Graypaw, who is a warrior apprentice from ThunderClan. And he also meets Blue Star, previously mentioned, the leader of ThunderClan, and Lionheart, who's another ThunderClan warrior. And they chat for a while, and Rusty's like, wow, I didn't realize it's so hard to be a warrior. And the others are like, yeah, it sucks. We never have enough food. But also, it's awesome. Do you want to join? And Rusty is like, well, I really would like to catch that mouse. So he gives it some thoughts. And then, of course, because this is a story with a plot, Rusty joins ThunderClan and he takes the name Firepaw. In typical warrior cats naming conventions, you have like a two-part name. The first part is like some natural element, hence like Gray and Graypaw, or Blue and Blue Star, or Lion and Lionheart, Fire, etc. And then your suffix, the second part of your name, is basically how experienced you are. If you're a baby, you have the suffix Kit. If you're an apprentice, like Firepaw and Graypaw, you have the suffix Paw. If you're a warrior cat, you have some suffix, again, something related to the natural world. So, like, usually related to, like, parts of a cat, but also not exclusively. So, like, stripe, tail, fur, claw, but also, like, heart, storm, other things. They kind of go a little wild with it. And then the leaders of the clan are given the suffix star because they have basically ascended to like godhood status. They have been blessed by the Star Clan, the God Cats, and they also are given 9 lives, which is very cute, IMO. And that's like their special Star Clan power is they have 9 lives. They can die a bunch of times and then come back to life. Anyways, Firepaw learns all these things in a series of really just a lot of exposition, mostly delivered by Graypaw, who sort of becomes his friend. There's a few other important characters. There's Ravenpaw, who's another apprentice. And he's kind of this, like, you know, nervous, skittish, like, you know, dweeby. Can a cat be dweeby? I don't know. This is like a nervous little skittish little guy. Their other apprentices are Sandpaw and Dustpaw, who both kind of suck. They're just kind of bullies. There's a lot of cats who don't like the fact super much that Firepaw is being let into the clan. These include Darkstripe and Longtail, who aren't very important, and Tigerclaw, who's very important, who is sort of like one of the main, set up as kind of a long-running antagonist, and one of the main antagonists in the book. He doesn't like Firepaw. He, in fact, only really cares for himself and power. So Tigerclaw is training Ravenpaw, Lionheart's training Graypaw, and both of them, for the time being, are going to train Firepaw. So a bunch of shit happens that we kind of go through like this for a while. Firepaw just like learns the stuff about being a warrior. He hunts, he makes friends, he makes enemies, he does some shit. I would say the plot doesn't really kick into gear until Firepaw meets Yellowfang. Yellowfang is an outcast from Shadow Clan, one of the other clans. I don't think I said this. Thunder Clan, River Clan, Shadow Clan, and Wind Clan. Wind Clan, and aside from the beginning, River Clan doesn't really show up, and Wind Clan barely shows up at all, so we mostly care about Thunder Clan and Shadow Clan. And, you know, very like Harry Potter, Gryffindor, like they're called Shadow Clan. Like, obviously, they're set up to be the villains, whatever. Though thankfully this book is better than Harry Potter and does a better job setting up its like evil team basically and making them a little more complex. This is getting way ahead of myself. Anyways, Firepaw meets Yellowfang, who is this like, she's an ex-medicine clan from Shadow Clan. She was kicked out and nobody likes her. She's a loner. She's mean. She's a crotchety old cat lady. Firepaw brings her back, but in doing so, he also, like, gets in trouble with the clan, so he has to kind of look after Yellowfang, and they sort of become friends, and eventually Yellowfang becomes sort of a closer-knit member of the clan, and it's mostly thanks to her friendship with Firepaw. Meanwhile, the kind of broader murmurings here are that Shadow Clan, the evil guys, are taking over the forest. They have too many kits and not enough food, and so they're basically like, we're gonna hunt in your areas and also try to steal your kits, which understandably Blue Star and Thunder Clan are like, we don't love that personally. So there's a couple battles. There's a battle in Thunder Clan where Lionheart, the kind of like noble warrior Lionheart, is killed, and it's very sad, especially for Graypaw. There is some other shit happens. They try and fail to steal the kits from ThunderClan. And then Blue Star is like, okay, well, I gotta go on a vision quest to the Moonstone, which is this, like, sacred Star Clan area. So she goes on a vision quest with Tiger Claw as well as Firepaw and Greypaw. And she's like, we gotta go back. They're fighting Thunder Clan again. They go back, there's another battle. This time they do steal the kits, but Yellowfang, who is, you know, mistrusted by the other ThunderClan cats, is accused of stealing the kits. She's seen leaving and the kits are gone. But Firepaw's like, I know Yellowfang wouldn't do that. I'm gonna go find her. Meanwhile, there's some other shit afoot that I have to mention, which is that Ravenpaw, the kind of skittish the skittish little guy, who's the apprentice of Tigerclaw, is getting in some shit because he knows that in the battle that took place in the prologue at the start of the book, everyone thought, oh, there was a tussle. The River Clan deputy Oakheart killed Redtail, the Thunder Clan deputy, and then Tigerclaw avenged his death, just like normal warrior stuff. However, Ravenpaw knows the truth, which is that Tigerclaw actually killed his own deputy, Redtail of Thunder Clan, because he wanted to, you know, ascend and become more powerful. And Ravenpaw knows this, and so Tigerclaw, because he's strong and has a lot of influence, is setting the clan against Ravenpaw. So Firepaw and Greypaw fake Ravenpaw's death and send him off to live with a friendly house cat named Barley, who they meet when they're going on their vision quest. So Ravenpaw has to leave the clan, but is safe from Tigerclaw's machinations. Meanwhile, Firepaw goes out to find Yellowfang, who obviously didn't steal the kits. She's trying to get them back. She's a good guy. And she's like, really, the whole problem here is that the Shadow Clan leader, Crooked Star, is evil and bad. And not Crooked Star, Broken Star. Sorry, they all have... Broken Star is the leader of Shadow Clan. And she's like, Broken Star has, you know, fucked up this whole clan. This is not the America that I grew up with. And she's like, I can get a bunch of the olds, like the old Shadow Clan, get the old gang back together. And they meet up with some Thunder Clan people, like White Storm, like the good guys. And they're like, let's go. Let's rescue the kits and overthrow Broken Star and throw off the evil, like the evil side of Shadow Clan. And they do that. That's all the things that they do. The evil Broken Star is sent away, along with like a bunch of, you know, the worst kind of the rogues of Shadow Clan, leaving the like the good old honorable Shadow Clan people to, rebuild. The kits come back, and then Firepaw and Greypaw are heroes for this because they did a lot of good work. They brought the kits back. Yellowfang comes back and becomes the new medicine cat because Spotted Leaf was killed. I forgot to mention that. Spotted Leaf, the medicine cat, was killed at some point. So the status quo of the book ends with Firepaw and Greypaw have proven their worth and they ascend to the rank of warriors. They become known as Fireheart and Graystripe. I forgot to mention that Blue Star was also mentoring Firepaw in and around here. She like took over his mentorship, so she trusts him, but nasty Tigerclaw, who killed Redtail, who set the clan against, you know, Ravenpaw and Yellowfang, like the kind of like evil scheming guy, is still kicking around. So the immediate threat of a Shadow Clan takeover is behind them. However, there is still strife inside the clan as Tigerclaw is, you know, what will his next move be? The evil Tigerclaw. And that's basically Warriors Into the Wild. I know there's lots of stuff that I missed, because there is so much background to cover in this book. And that's kind of, I want to talk a bit about like my thoughts about the book and everything, which I liked. I think I should start off by saying I actually really enjoyed this book. I think the intro is a little slow. I think it takes some time to get going. However, I think it's good. I think it's really enjoyable. I think probably my biggest issue is that like there's way too much going on here. There's so many names. Like, I've mentioned a dozen names. I haven't even mentioned all the Thunderclan cats that comes up. Like, there are the queens who are, you know, responsible for giving birth to kits and looking after them. There are the elders who are old people. I barely talked about medicine cats. I mentioned deputies, but that's just the second in command. But there's the whole thing with, like, who is chosen to be deputies and, you know, the seniority in the ranks. You have to remember, like, half a dozen warriors, half a dozen apprentices, medicine cat leader, a few, you know, relevant elders and queens. Like, this is a... And not to mention that, but also, like, the concepts. I feel like the first, like, quarter of this book is 90% just Graypaw talking about some stuff. And then Firepaw is like, oh, what's StarClan? What's Four Trees? What's the Highstones? What's the Moonstone? What's Mothermouth? What's the Sunning Rock? Like, it's just like every other fucking word is capitalized and is some, like, concept. And I'm just like, I don't know if I have, like, a fix for this, because, like, obviously, you want to set up a world and set up a living, breathing, you know, society of these cats, which I think, like, to the author's credit, they actually do really successfully. I just think that it's an awkward getting there, and I would not be surprised if there were some kids, you know, reading this book who picked up Into the Wild and were like, I want to read about all these cats getting into cool battles, and then, you know, 50 pages of exposition later, they're just like, snore, okay. And didn't finish. I can imagine that happening. Which, like, you can't please everyone, but I do think that's probably my biggest issue with the book. I should mention, since I talked about the author, so the Warrior Cats books are all written by Aaron Hunter, which is a pen name to actually describe a collective of authors. There are three or four... I'm actually have the list up right now. So this book was written by Kate Carey, who is... one of the Aaron Hunters, but this also includes Victoria Holmes, who is the editor, and then I think Kate Carey, Cherith Baldry, there's a few others listed in the wiki, though I don't know who contributed to what, but Invalia Searles, Tui T. Sutherland, and Rosie Best, these are all the names credited under the Aaron Hunter pen name. There's also Jillian Phillips, who was fired from Warriors for being a TERF, which is very funny, and I hope that we get into talk about that at some point in more detail, because that would be great to discuss. Anyways, so pretty awkward introduction, but I do think that, like, a lot of the drama here is good. I think, like, the stuff I like most about this book, the thing I like most about this book is Yellowfang, by a mile. Yellowfang rules. The dynamic between Yellowfang and Firepaw rules. It's, like, really fun to have Yellowfang just be, like, this crotchety old lady who's also, like, kind of a vicious warrior, but who's also a medicine cat, and so is really good with, like, healing herbs and stuff. And just, like, her being crotchety, but also, like, expressing a lot of love towards Firepaw in her own way, and, like, teaching him a lot in her own way, and the two sort of slowly, like, genuinely becoming friends. Easily, I think, the best part of the book. Another thing that's really good about the book, Tigerclaw. Tigerclaw is a great villain. It's always fun, especially in, like, so kids' books do this a lot, right? Where, like, the villain is someone who is, like, an adult or an authority figure who's, like, up to some shit, and the kids have seen him through, but, like, no, he's convincing the other adults that he's, you know, only has pure intentions, but no, the kids can see through him, but they just need to convince the right person that, like, you know, the principal is evil or what. This happens a lot. I mean, this happens all the fucking time in Harry Potter. This happens in Animorphs, where, like, basically, like, the almost one of the theses of the Animorphs series is, like, don't trust adults. These are mostly my frame of references for YA books, so I'm probably going to talk about Harry Potter and Animorphs a lot. I've read a lot of others, but just don't remember them as well. And it's fun because Tigerclaw is very much that, but a cat, which is just, like, fun. And, you know, he's vicious. He's, like, is a vicious fighter. He's, like, he's, like, willing to kill and draw blood. And is also sort of the, like, your evil vice principal guy. And, like, I think it's fun in contrast to Blue Star, where, like, I think when you're reading this book, you are definitely supposed to get the sense that Blue Star is, like, this great hero, this great leader, wise, you know, doesn't really make, like, big mistakes, like she's kind of this like wise noble leader. But I think you also get the sense, and I certainly did in this reading, that like she, I don't know, it's the kind of thing that like you probably wouldn't pick up on if you read it as a kid, but like reading it as an adult, I'm like, oh yeah, no, she is like, you know, struggling to figure out what to do and like using her best judgment, and sometimes she puts her faith in the wrong people, and like she is fallible. And that's, I think, a good character. I think it's like, it's fun to have that tension of like, there's all these times where like, you know, Firepaw finds out the secret about this, the Tiger Claw conspiracy about him killing Redtail. And there's a bunch of times where he's like, I just need to tell Blue Star. I just need to tell Blue Star. Oh, but it's not the right time. Or, oh, like she's not receptive right now. And I think it's this really nice tension of like, you want to trust Blue Star. You want to like put your faith in the like great supreme authority figure. However, you just can't quite do it. Like, she's just not all the way there. Like, and I think it's this nice sort of tension between, like, you know, a trusted authority figure, but also, like, sometimes you just have to put in the work yourself and get shit done. And I really like where the book falls kind of along those lines. Other things about the book, just, like, thinking about some characters and stuff. The Star Clan stuff, I mean, the Nine Lives thing is cute, but the Star Clan stuff, at least so far, like, really doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, like, obviously they're building up to shit with it, and, you know, it will become more central, but I think in this first book it's just kind of like, eh, like, they have spirit gods. It's kind of confusing. And, you know, I think that's something I'm really curious for, is, like, the ways in which Star Clan becomes more central, because right now I'm, like, I'm not super convinced. Another thing, I wanted to bring up Spotted Leaf. I think Spotted Leaf is kind of a really awkward character in this book. She's the initial medicine cat, and she sort of also has that Blue Star quality of, like, you know, the perfect, wise leader. In this case, like, oh, she knows everything about medicine. She's, like, the perfect medicine cat. You come to her for all your troubles, and she, you know, cleans your wounds and sends you on your way with a smile, and etc. So it's kind of got a bit of that, like, all-powerful authority figure, but there's a bit of a, like, there's a bit of a side aspect of, I don't know, the kind of, like, too pure to live, like, divine feminine cat. I know that sounds stupid, but, like, it is kind of awkward. Like, I feel like all of the guys have crushes on Spotted Leaf. Like, every time Firepaw goes to see Spotted Leaf, it's like, oh, what is this unknown feeling? This is like deep tingling sensation. It's like, okay, like, obviously he has a crush on like the hot nurse. Like, yeah, that's fine. But it's just like the way she's kind of like too pure to live, like, you know, the perfect, you know, the perfect mother figure almost, is like, I don't know. I don't know to what extent Spotted Leaf's going to be important in the future, but we'll see. That kind of just, like, I don't know, for how well characters like Blue Star and Yellow Fang are written, Spotted Leaf, she's not super in the book, but I was just like, eh, this kind of rubs me the wrong way, especially because, like, I have really strong memories of her from reading this series the first time. Yeah, and I like Ravenpaw a lot. I like the whole having to send him away thing is, like, an interesting plot line that I think mostly works, and I do have a recollection of him coming back up throughout the series, so we'll see to what extent that is. We'll discover if he and Barley ever explore each other's bodies. I think Ravenpaw is the most queer-coded character, which is always something I'm on the lookout for. Ravenpaw is very much the, Weird Paul, but Simon from Lord of the Flies. This kind of, like, you know, too pure to live, like, sweet, dear, innocent boy. And that's, like, I don't know, that's kind of a funny caricature. And yeah, I'll be interested to see how that comes up. Graypaw, also, I'll just mention, Firepaw's best friend. Enormous Ron Weasley energy, like, just, like, the like, platonic sidekick character. He's always hungry, he's always talking about food, he's always making jokes, he's always razzing the other apprentices. He's just like a fun, laid back, cool guy. And like, I don't know, that character is like not the most compelling to me. But I like Graypaw. He's hard not to like. He's just like a fun guy. We'll see. I do think they make his they add a little bit more pathos to his story, so we'll see. So that mostly covers my thoughts about the first Warriors book, Into the Wild. So let's talk about something else, and then compare these two things. And that thing is Elden Ring, the video game developed by From Software. Elden Ring is the new Dark Souls game. It is, in a sense, Dark Souls 4, but in a new setting. I know someone's gonna be mad at me for saying that, but it's true. Dark Souls, you know, it's this kind of dark fantasy adventure series where you are a fucked up little guy who has to go on a quest, and you slowly become more powerful and more central to the world and are sort of involved in the process of making or remaking it. And Elden Ring is no different. You're a fucked up little guy called the Tarnished, or a Tarnished, and as a Tarnished, you are sort of, you are without holiness, you are without grace, and it is your job to go on a quest to retrieve the shards of this artifact called the Elden Ring, by defeating these huge, super powerful deities called demigods or shard bearers, and then basically claim your place as the Elden Lord, as like the new ruler of the world. I might get into some spoilers for Elden Ring. I'll like very maybe vague lore spoilers, if that concerns you. I'll try to put timestamps to some degree. You've been warned that for the next until the end of the episode that I might get into some mild Elden Ring spoilers. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Elden Ring, which I finished after about like 120 hours, and I'm slowly picking away at a second playthrough just for the kicks, because I like playing the game. And I wanted to talk, as is the remit of this series, about how Warriors Into the Wild and Elden Ring, how they compare to each other, what looking at them both can maybe inform us about the other. The thing I think that most readily comes to mind here is just the notion of like introductions and storytelling. I talked a lot about how I think Into the Wild is like a clumsy, if necessary, introduction to the Warrior Cat series, and that like a lot of work is done to really explicitly lay out this like fully realized world. And I think it's fun to compare these because Elden Ring and historically FromSoft games have taken a very different approach to world building, where you get an introductory cutscene with the names of a bunch of guys, which, to be fair, that is one for one with Warrior Cats. You can just imagine like the cutscene, except where it's like the loathsome dung eater, it's like the vicious warrior tiger claw. Like, I mean, tiger claw is the loathsome dung eater, just that's clear. Or maybe no, the loathsome dung eater might be dark stripe, actually. Dark stripe's a real piece of shit. Anyways, this just like go through and you know, but then yeah, then in Souls games or in From games, you're just kind of thrust into the world, and you know, you'll find some you know, very mysterious figures who give you very vague directions and then cryptically laugh. Then you're just kind of going unsent on your way, and like you'll get very brief snippets of dialogue that sort of like usually just make things more confusing. You'll get item descriptions as your big source of like what's going on in the world. And then you'll have to go into it. And by the time you get to the end of the game, you hope that you've pieced together, you know, enough of what's going on in the world and, you know, what the hell it means to be tarnished or what the Elden Ring is, or not, or you won't. I think like it's interesting to put these in comparisons. Obviously there are differences. Like Into the Wild is a book, firstly, so you can't like rely on the experience of play to sort of like, you can't like piece things together. Like anything that isn't on the page, like isn't on the page. It's not in the story. Anything beyond that, you know, you can make inference and you can make, you know, your own headcanon, but unlike in something like a video game or like a Souls game, where you are kind of expected to make these inferences and kind of draw your own personal theories. Like, for a YA novel, the text, I think, is very much the text. And, like, you can have subtext and you can read into stuff, but that's kind of more falls within the realm of, like, headcanon and, you know, your own personal possibility space. And, I mean, I really like the Souls approach to storytelling. I think, in general, I'm going to make a strong statement that I like it. It is one of my favorite ways of, certainly, world building. Like, you know, characters are one thing, direct plot is one thing, but if you're just talking about, like, the abstract fundamentals of a world, I think it's much cooler, you know. Imagine the Souls Warrior Cats game, where, you know, you're put into a world and you're kind of a loner cat in this world of cats, and you're fighting other cats, and you see, like, little, like, pieces of flavor text. You see, like, a mouse item, and it's like, mice are often hunted by the warriors of ThunderClan, and you're like, oh, what's ThunderClan? And you sort of, like, piece this together over time, as opposed to Graypaw sitting you down and being like, okay, these are the four clans. These are their leaders. These are their deputies. These are what they all eat. These are the areas that they inhabit. These are, like, their clan-specific characteristics, and Wind Clan is really fast, and River Clan can swim, and, like, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know, more kind of inferential, more, like, inferences in storytelling in YA, please. I think the kids can take it. I think it would be cool if less was explained to us about the warrior's world, because I think it's slightly overexplained. I also wanted to talk a little bit about, like, action and grittiness, I guess is the way to put it. Into the Wild is, like, a pretty grim book, and I think it sets a tone pretty immediately that, like, oh, this is, like, serious. Like, you know, death is extremely on the table. Like, I'm pretty sure you get, like, explicit cat death in the first, like, 5 pages of Into the Wild. And, you know, like, stealing kits is on the table. And, you know, I mean, this is not so much, like, quote-unquote dark content, but, like, romance is on the table, I think. I'm trying to think if that comes up. It certainly comes up implicitly with, like, crushes and stuff, but I think, like, as, you know, Firepaw grows up a bit, that becomes more central to the story. But yeah, like, all these things are very, very quickly, you know, put on the table. And I think it really sets a tone that is, like, I would say darker than a lot of YA. I'm trying to think because, like, I don't know, I've mentioned Animorphs, which is one of my main frames of reference. And Animorphs is really fucking dark, but it also takes a while to get there. And it's also, like, I don't know if it's as implicit in the DNA, or explicit in the DNA of the series. No, I'm saying this and I'm taking it all back. Because, like, you know, there's gross transformations, there's blood, there's, you know, death and shit right up front. So maybe, I don't know if Warriors is more harsh and violent than, like, average YA. It's certainly, like, more violent on its face than, like, the first couple Harry Potter books. And I think then, like, a lot of comparable YA, and I don't know, I think that does a pretty good job right at the top of setting a tone. Elden Ring, I think, is interesting to compare here, just because, like, I think it also sets up a tone right up front, like, mostly through, just, like, the heritage of the series, and, like, you know, oh, Souls games are about dying over and over again. They're gritty, they're dark, they're, you know, violent, etc., etc. Your only real way of interacting with the world is violence. But I don't know, something that actually bothers me a little bit about Elden Ring is I feel like the story sort of gets a little bit darker for its own sake. Like, it covers ground in, I would say, a more mean-spirited way than a lot of other Souls games. It deals with, like, you know, like, someone, like, kidnaps a child, and, like, for all in a, like, abusive context, and there's, like, you know, a lot more just, like, oh, these gods and people are really, like, fucked up, and there's a lot of violence for violence's own sake, and that sort of thing. And I think it kind of, like, almost sneaks in there, and in terms of how it ramps up its like kind of dark and gritty elements, even beyond the degree that you might expect if you've already played a Souls game. Because, I don't know, most of the other Souls games I would say are pretty, like, I don't quite know what the word is, but like, I almost want to say chaste, right? Like, they are very violent, but they're also like, there is almost a purity in that violence and a single-mindedness in that violence. Whereas I think Elden Ring is kind of just like dirtier and grimier, very much more so, just like explicitly throughout the stories. So I guess what I'm trying to say here, because this has kind of been a weird tangent, is that like I am interested in how different series like change their tones over time, either in like bringing in a new audience or in bringing in a new creative or creative team, or like just like changing how they approach the world. So I guess what I'm saying is like I think Elden Ring can be instructive as like the ways that a series can kind of subtly change its tone over time. Even like, you know, compare it to something like Bloodborne, which is, you know, very, you know, dark, bloody, horror, gothic, etc. But I think is still, I would say, almost the grimness is kind of more like on the surface, unlike, you know, Elden Ring, where I think it's a little bit more buried. So what I'm trying to say is let's see how the Warrior Cat series deals with its dark themes. Let's see how well they're sort of telegraphed and what attempt the series makes to either try to stay at a consistent tone or like signal a shift in its coming tone based on, you know, changing audience or changing interest in themes from the Erin Hunters or whatever that might be. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all I wanted to say. The bottom line is, I really liked Into the Wild. I thought it was a good book. It made me more excited. The beginning was a bit rough, but once I got into it, I was, I think, more excited, than before to read the rest of the series and to keep going. I'm gonna give it a 7. I don't know what that 7 is out of, but I'm going to give it a 7. And Elden Ring is a truly wonderful game to play. It's a real experience. It really feels like something to be part of, you know, the next big game in this, you know, truly, you know, long-running and, you know, to me, deeply important series. Though I don't think it's without its flaws, and I think it it does take its tone and its story in a bit of an odd direction that I'm not necessarily sure always works. All this being said, that's where we're at. So next week I am going to read the second Warrior Cats book, which is called Fire and Ice, and I'll have some things to say about it. And I'll also read or watch or play something else. I don't know what yet. Your guess is as good as mine. It could be anything. This has been the January Lilith Warrior Cats Project. You can find me online, but I'd prefer if you didn't. Have a lovely day. Get outside for a minute. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, the weather's changing for the better. If you live in the Southern Hemisphere, it's not that bad yet, I assume. I don't know where you are. I don't know your life. But get outside for a few minutes, even if it's shit out. Sometimes it's nice to just go for a walk. Get yourself some nice food at some point over the next, you know, couple weeks. Get yourself something that you like, that makes you feel happy. Get a good night's sleep tonight. You know, if you're staying up late, just go to bed. Go to bed after this. And stay frosty. Stay frosty, my guys.